Tony Gonzalez and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Indianapolis, where Vontaze Burfict was up to his old tricks yesterday, getting ejected from the Raiders' win over the Colts for a dirty hit on tight end Jack Doyle. Burfict blew kisses to the fans on his way out, but he also just kissed the whole season goodbye, with the NFL suspending the controversial linebacker for the rest of the year, explaining that Burfict's history of rules violations was a factor in the decision. The question here is, should Vontaze Burfict be allowed to play in the NFL again at all?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is just the next step in terms of penalty and severity of penalty when you talk about this. So, season long, $5 million basically just burned up again on top of the $4.2 million in fines and lost game checks he's already accrued over his career. Goodness. So, yeah, he deserves another chance. You know, part of the opportunity that comes from penalty is the redemption. So you got to give him that
XFL.
Chance.
XFL.
Huh?
XFL.
No, not yet. He's 29.
XFL.
Why? Look, this takes us back. Let's not get too political. The 90s. Yeah. Three strikes law. Remember that? How did that look in history now?
Trust me, I get it.
Yeah, so XFL, yeah, he deserves it.
There's a league coming called the XFL, and it's for ex-NFL players like him. Early in the morning, I was like, yeah. I watched a highlight video of his collection of hits, and then I thought, they had problems with this dude at Arizona State over dirty hits.
Yeah.
XFL.
No, man, trust your gut. Your intuition is 6 million times faster than cognitive thought. You know what that means? Whatever you felt first is what you should have went with. Don't start watching it over and over again and talking yourself into a different mindset.
XFL.
I'm with it. He's coming back next year. I'll see
people
him
again. Are resting in the Hall of Fame that made their careers off of hitting the way that Vontaze Burfict hits. So the reality, and that's truth. Like, that's not up for debate. Yeah. You can go.
You know the NFL changed, though, right?
Yeah, it changes and it evolves. But the reality of it is that now we're looking at what we talked about and discussed before with this crisis. Is there an officials crisis? Is there a player safety crisis? And this is yes. This screams yes. Because the reality of it is that a targeting hit? Yes. But to make
should
it
he play again?
To make it egregious enough to say he shouldn't play again, I disagree with that. He should be able to play again.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
he should be able to play again.
After he spends a year or two in the XFL proving he knows how to play football, I say bring him back.
How many times has he been fined for dirty hits?
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Do we have a number on that? Because I know it's a lot, because this isn't the first time we've talked about
it. He had these issues at Arizona State.
He's had a history of this throughout his career. And being an offensive player, obviously you guys are defensive players, so I see why you're siding with that. I think, what does it take? I have kids. And I can tell my child to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, but they're learning. By the time they get older, I would expect for them to stop doing this. Vontaze Burfict, he has not learned. I'm saying, look, you are going to jeopardize people. You're hitting this man in the top of his head. This could have got even worse. Maybe he cracks his neck. He guy can't play anymore. You're not learning. And then you're blowing kisses on top of it after you've been through all that too much trouble. I say, I would hate to say this, but obviously you need a little break. Not more than just this year. You're not learning.
What else can we do? I think they just told me 13 suspensions.
That's it. Come on, 13. You got it. To me, you got to go. And I hate excessive. Taking away his livelihood.
What, the 13 strikes law?
I've always been.
This ain't three strikes.
Bill Clinton, like 13.
I've always been a Burfict apologist. I really
have.
I love the way he plays. I love his passion. If you know the guy, he's an awesome young man. I get it, and I totally agree with where you're coming from, with what you're saying.
When I said it wasn't.
I just think that it is truly rooted in the player safety crisis that the NFL.
Yeah,
is
we know that.
To deal with.
No, it's not rooted in that. And for him, this is what makes him, and this is what's going to break him. It's the fact that he knows he has limited physical skills. So what he's always done is make up for that.
Yeah.
The curse of the gifted, in the sense of he knows that he's not so gifted, so he's going to go out there and try and do
extra. He knows
he's
physical.
Exactly.
He knows what
out physical
Hulk smash.
Ability.
Look, everything about this, from launching to the ducked head and basically trying to spear somebody, they've been trying to tell this dude for 6 years, cut that out. It's not allowed.
Yeah.
He refuses to accept that. And so whatever it's rooted in, they got rules set up to prevent it. He won't follow him. I get it. I've talked to people that swear by Vontaze Burfict off the field.
And on the field. He was a captain this year.
No, I get it. But people swear by him off the field. Yeah. Yeah. Those of us that watch him on the field is like, hey, man. And I've defended him in the past. But this is a bridge too far.
Let me ask you this. Why didn't the NFL suspend him for life? That's an option. Why not?
Probably because they plan on him perhaps returning to the NFL.
Yeah.
But the question we're debating, I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it.
I would let this dude go play in Vince McMahon's league and show me some proof before I ever allow you back in the NFL.
Well,
I'm going to tell you this. Mm. And I'm going to tell you this, what the NFL has to be worried about. Let's say they let him back in and he does paralyze somebody the next time. They're going to be involved in the lawsuit that comes
true.
Too.
That's true.
You've seen this guy 13 times. You've seen him, Antonio Brown, all kinds of guys, and you kept letting him back in the league. The league's hands may be tied here. Mm. This remainder of the season suspension may just be the first step.
The bigger conversation is you have to do this and you have to set the standard and the bar so nobody else decides to slip back in.
Yeah, that's why he needs to go. Now you agree with me. Once Tony said it, I
understand y'all's logic.
Right. Talk some NBA. Haven't done this in a while. Mm. Where LeBron James and Anthony Davis will be looking to turn things around for the Lakers this season. The pair showed up at the team's recent media day, and LeBron had some pointed comments about how they plan to use their newest weapon.
If we're not playing through Anthony Davis while he's on the floor, then it makes no sense to have him on the floor. It's exciting to have such a beautiful young mind, a beautiful player, but also a great leader as well. And it doesn't mean like every time down, you know, we throw it to him and throw it to him and throw it to him, but we have the ability to do that. And he's been very efficient in his career. He commands double teams. And when you're able to attract two, you know, defenders on one guy, then you have the numbers game. Now you got a 4-on-3 on the backside. So it opens up for, you know, for other guys on the floor, including myself.
Let me just say this first and foremost. Mm. LeBron's hair, my God, it is back on point to start
Christy,
the season.
I'm not gonna let you say
it. Holy cow, that looks awesome. All right. Whatever he paid for that, it was well worth it. Money well spent.
That'd be $8.
That's all. That's all.
Are you buying LeBron will take a back seat to AD?
Oh, man. You know what? Since my man Doc, this has been around in the building with all these guys one-on-one, I want to defer to you. It's been a lot of conversation about Lakerland and how they're going to go down. What you thinking?
So I'm the one asked him that question to get that response. And the reason I asked, because I wanted to know the answer as well to what you guys are talking about. I'll say this. Let me go a bit, little background. I was covering LeBron in Cleveland that first year when him and Kyrie paired together. And LeBron insisted that Kyrie was going to be the primary ball handler. Because that's what people wanted to know at that time. Can LeBron play with another primary ball handler that's a point guard? And I remember it was a particular game. I believe it was like in January. Kyrie Irving scored, I think it was 20 points. His game was off. But he had one assist. Mm. And I remember players were talking about that in the locker room. Like, dude, he's a point guard. One assist? Like, what? You couldn't find anybody the whole game? After that game, LeBron took over ball handling duties from that point on. Mm. So I bring that up to say this. Look, I think it's wise LeBron to lean on a 26-year-old guy in his prime who's a star in this league. But I will say this. Covering this guy and knowing him, if things start to trickle downwards and things aren't going up to par, he doesn't have a problem at all with taking the reins back. But I think he's going to at least give Anthony Davis the shot initially on.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, my antennas went up when I heard this because earlier in the year, there were reports of LeBron being the point guard. Those were quickly refuted.
I reported that.
You reported that? Damn, you do everything.
But I'll say that it was quickly refuted, but the first lineup that's in there right now is LeBron, Avery Bradley in the backcourt. That means LeBron's
the point guard.
That's what
I'm saying. And so now LeBron, who's leaning into L.A. this year compared to last year where he didn't lean into L.A. in terms of how he was embraced L.A., it makes sense for LeBron to say now, hey, we're going to run this through you, bro. Mm-hmm. The responsibility is on you, young man. Go out there and get it. Meanwhile, LeBron knows that those keys are both of theirs. Like, he's keeping the keys as well as the de facto point guard. So To me, this sounds like a little bit more of what you want to say, not what you want to do. And that's going to be the interesting play when they hit adversity, because the durability of Anthony Davis has always been the one question mark with him. LeBron is up in age. They've already had injuries to Kuzma. They had no Boogie. Come on, man. This is a recipe for disaster if LeBron's
going to Chris is already giggling because...
I'm looking at your face, man. Right, well, look,
LeBron's a chess player, man. Mm. He is a chess player, and he's always thinking two or three moves ahead in all of his decisions. The unfortunate thing for LeBron, I'm always thinking five or six moves ahead, and that's why I can decipher LeBron. LeBron James is putting it into the record. This is on AD.
Yeah.
We didn't get Kawhi.
Oh.
This is on AD. We're going to go through AD. I'm letting everybody know we're going through. And if it doesn't work out,
the scapegoat.
That guy.
There it is. Mm-hmm. And so to me, this is a great strategy because, again, LeBron's a chess player for football season. We are in football season right now, and we will be until the first week of February. Mm. Once the Super Bowl ends, LeBron will come back and be like, now we're going, the spotlight's on me. And basketball, now I'm taking back control because I think he already knows they have a big problem already sitting in the Staples Center in the L.A. Clippers. Mm-hmm. He's got his injury protection or injury or if they lose protection. AD, we ran it through AD. This wasn't my team. He's the star, blah, blah, blah. And so after the Super Bowl, LeBron can, if things aren't going well, which in comparison to the Clippers, I don't think they will be, LeBron can put on his cape and try to save the Lakers. Hey, we tried to go through the young guy, but I'm 35 now, and I have to go put on my cape and
activate again.
Activate. Mm-hmm. And so I just think this is a smart, calculated move by LeBron. Put the ball in AD's hand. Mm. It's like lobbing that grenade over here, Marcellus. I'm gonna run out to the bathroom. Yeah. Let me know if you survive.
It's the quarterback saying, hey, everything goes through our running game. And it's like, but you touch the ball first, dude. Like, you ain't fooling nobody. You got 40 attempts. I get 20 carries. Everything goes through me. You're not slick right there. That's how I read it.
You know what? If LeBron is a couple steps ahead of us and Whitlock, if you five steps ahead of y'all, I'm like 10 steps behind y'all because I didn't see that coming. Like, I didn't see that this was a premeditated plan for LeBron to appoint a scapegoat. I didn't see that, Whitlock.
Have you not been watching LeBron for the past 10 years? There's always a scapegoat.
I just looked at it as he's 35. It makes all the sense in the world to make sure your young horse gets the boatload of the work in the regular season and then postseason, things change.
Did you not? LeBron also had, or there have been, did LeBron say it or did people in the media say it for him? That LeBron is about to take vengeance on all his critics. He's about to go in on a higher level than he ever has, blah, blah, blah. So he's saying that. And so if you really think, I've never met an athlete who reached LeBron's level of greatness who said, don't run it through me, run it through somebody else. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was damn near 62 when he retired. He still wanted it run through him.
Right,
Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, Larry Bird with no back or several back injuries. Joe Namath came out to the L.A. Rams on two bad knees. And he was. I've never seen greatness say, now I've seen it snatched. I've seen LeBron go to Miami and say, Dwayne, I'm sorry. This is mine. It's the only way we can win. But handing it over, that's not what the all-time greats do.
And look, that's why when the roster was constructed as is, and then I heard that he was the point guard, and then that quickly, I mean, they said, do not let that out. I was like, oh, that's a different play for this team. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense when you hear that, and then you see this, you're like, how do I reconcile the two? LeBron is saying, basically, I got a young guy, and I'm hiding this in plain sight. Mm-hmm. I'm hiding it behind a 26-year-old. And you don't understand that what's going on is last year was a disaster despite LeBron's great numbers, disaster in reception. So now he's like, receive me differently. Mm-hmm. I am not the king. Even though I'm trying to get the Lakers back to where they were, it's not going to be all on me. We're going to share this responsibility because of what happened last year.
But just like you brought the analogy with the quarterback, and you're mentioning that no star player has just given up the reins. LeBron James is still going to be the primary ball handler.
Right.
So it's still going to go through him. He's still going to be – he's saying it's going through AD, but he has to want to be one to initiate the offense through AD. So he's still very much in charge. It's just the big boy got to get a lot of work done
over
there. Well,
I think it's just in terms of perception.
I get that. That makes sense.
I think it's a perception. He's going to control the ball, but he's created the perception that everything's running through AD. Hey, LeBron said it. And again, if you can just show, I just started thinking about more. Do you think Kobe ever turned it over to anybody? Tom Brady's 42. He ain't turned it over to nobody. Michael Jordan, this is, I don't want to say it's as bad as this, but it'll be like Michael Jordan going to the Wizards. We're going to run this through Kwame Brown.
Yeah. What are you doing Friday? Hey, it's my mic, but it's just like it's both of ours.
Hey, Whit, if you don't pass the baton and allow me and Marcellus to speak, and this segment is a bust, who that segment is going to fall on? The blame is going to be placed on who? Mm. You. Mm. LeBron, the primary distributor. So he's still going to get his bulk of the shared blame if the Lakers do falter.
That's true, but...
You like, man, that, Dodgy?
That's true, but, man, LeBron, I'm telling you, he's like a Corleone if you ever watch the Godfather movies. And LeBron loves the Godfather movies. And if you watch the Godfather... They had control of the media, the Corleone family. Mm. They could get their stories planted whenever they wanted.
I don't know nothing about that one.
And LeBron James has a lot of influence over the media.
It's like, I ain't lose all this weight for you to start hating now. Got that new watch.
I don't know about that.
LeBron. No, did we miss anything?
Yeah, let's stay right here in L.A. where Clippers News edition Paul George recently said that he believes he and Kawhi Leonard are the best duo in the NBA.
Duh.
Well, my guy, Frank Vogel, has some different thoughts. And when he was asked about LeBron and AD versus every other duo in the league, he responded saying, quote, "We have the best of them. I put those two guys against anybody in the league." I want to ask you guys, do you agree with Vogel?
I do, but just slightly. There's a lot of good duos out here. And LeBron and AD have a chance to be a very good duo, but I would put Kawhi and Paul George just because of the age factor and just because of where the NBA is right now. You got the best two-way players in the league. I give them a slight advantage.
Man, tough to argue this one. A lot of good duos out there, LeBron and AD, and only one great duo, and that's Kawhi and PG, because duo is just short for dual responsibilities. Offense and defense. You got to play both ends. You're going both ways in basketball. And that's why I give the edge to our younger duo, collectively. And we play both sides of the court.
I disagree with you, both of you guys, on this point. There are not a lot of great duos out there. There are good duos.
There's only one good.
There's about three great, probably great duos. Yeah. But I'm going to mention the best one. I think it is LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Just from the standpoint, that's an inside-outside threat. And I get your dual threat, offensively.
LeBron defense last year, AD defense
AD told me he's going to get LeBron James up to par defensively. He wants LeBron James to make an all-defensive
team. Who's going to get AD defensively up to par? LeBron does control the media. Let me stop.
I'm just going to say this.
What?
To me, Kawhi and Paul George, man, that's R. Kelly and Jay-Z, the best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds. It ain't the best now, though.
I understand that. I understand that. And I understand R. Kelly's problems.
Yeah. Don't let him bring it out of duo.
Joined now by Houston Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta.
And author,
yeah. Look, and I'm going to start there before we get into all the James Harden, Westbrook questions. Mm. Shut Up and Listen, your book, what's it about?
You know, Harper Collins approached me about 18 months ago and said, "Hey, Tillman, we watch your TV show. We see you on all these business shows and sports shows, and we love your Tillmanisms. Why don't you just tell the tools that took you from having one restaurant to being worth $5 billion?" And that's kind of what I do. It's not stories. It's the 95-5 rule. Know what you know what you don't know. There are no spare customers. Take the word no out of your damn vocabulary. And it's just kind of the things that I did to become successful.
So if I read this book, will I someday be on TV and be like, Jason, you started eating at one restaurant, and now you're worth $5 billion.
It's like we're brothers from another. Shut up and listen. Never shut up.
That's us.
Right?
That's us.
Humanism, Wileyism, that's where my $5 billion at. Man, I ain't got that part. I don't have that going.
All right. Daryl Morey pulls the trigger on probably the biggest trade of the offseason. Mm. Why did you guys do that, CP3, for Russell Westbrook?
I'll tell you, and it kind of goes back to the book. At the end of the year, me and Daryl and Coach sit down, and we were in my office, and I even said this, hey, we do 95% of everything right. We've won more games than the Rockets have ever won in the last 2 years. What is the 5% we're missing? And we think Russell Westbrook is at 5%. And we feel like he's going to give us something in transition and his athleticism to pick up our pace that we did not have. Now, I think Chris Paul's unbelievable. I think Oklahoma City's going to be better than anybody's given him credit because Chris Paul has a lot of greatness left in him. But I think for the Houston Rockets today, we feel like that Russell Westbrook made us a better team. I remember watching that son of a gun running up down the court last year when they beat us twice and saying, what would it be like to have him on our team? I mean, he is so athletic.
Now, take us into your mindset and the level of concern because of usage rate, because it's going to be a shared experience, one ball, two guys who really do well with the ball in their hands. What are you thinking about that?
They're talking about it, and the two of them have to work it out. I mean, Daryl and me and Mike can talk about it all we want, but the two of them have to do it. You got to remember this. James and Russ came into the league at the same time.
Yeah.
Chris is 4 years older. In basketball years, that's like 20 years, okay, when you look at the longevity of careers. Those two guys played together in Oklahoma City. They played ball in L.A. together. They've known each other a long time. They're both 30 years old, and they both want to win a championship, okay, which is good for me, okay? They're going to work this out. They are working it out right now. This wouldn't have happened. Remember, this trade wouldn't have happened if James Harden didn't say, I want to do this, okay? James Harden pulls the trigger as much as me and Daryl. So,
Tillman, I heard you say after the season or at some point last season about wanting to instill your attitude into the franchise. And it makes, I don't know if that was a level of toughness you were talking about or what, but one of the things I find interesting about Russell Westbrook, and I want your thoughts on this, obviously, is he plays the game with an anger. And I've said, for a guy that handles the ball that much, you got to play the game with more joy. If you're angry, it affects your decision-making. What do you think about Russell's attitude, and is that the right fit for the Houston Rockets? Will he maybe add the toughness you're talking about, and maybe I'm missing that? Have there been any discussions about Russell's attitude and the energy he plays with on the court?
Well, and we love his energy, and one thing we all know, you can never make good decisions if you're doing it angry. And my culture is to win, and it's no matter what I do. But the Rockets are a winning franchise, and when I inherited this team with a great coach, a great player, great general manager, a great operations president, I'm very fortunate, okay? But you know what? They know how bad I want to win. But I don't want to win any more than James Harden doesn't want to win a championship and Russ Westbrook and Mike D'Antoni and Daryl. They all want a ring, so we're all on the same page. Russ is going to do whatever it takes to make sure that him and James are going to make this work. And if Russ has to slow down a little bit, I'm sure he's going to slow down a little bit. But one of the things I love about him is the way he plays, and I think that's what James loves about him, is the way he plays. But the two of them have to make it work. Mike ain't going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Daryl's not going to do it. But I have faith in those two guys.
Now, you made mention of Coach D'Antoni. Is it title or bust this season for Coach D'Antoni?
I'll tell you right now, it's absolutely not title or bust. Mike's represented well from a very great agent, and we just weren't able to make a deal. But you got to understand, in the business world I live in, Mike's under contract, okay? I didn't even think anything of it. And somebody said, oh, you know, how is Mike going to be a lame duck coach? And me and Mike sat down, and we just said, no, let's not worry about it this year. We'll get it done after next year. Me and Mike are fine. Mike will be the coach, I promise you, year after next, okay? Mike and I are in a good place, but he's under contract, and we'll put him under a new contract next year.
Tillman, you can pass on this question because Carmelo Anthony was just there a short period of time. I don't know how well you got to know him. So feel free to pass if you don't. But are you surprised Carmelo's not back in the league? I loved his interview he did with Stephen A. Smith.
I did too.
I felt like he had humbled himself and was in the right mindset. Are you surprised no one's given him a chance yet?
I'm 100% surprised. And I never got a chance to get to know him that well. But this guy's got a lot of basketball left in him. And he could not have been more of a gentleman. And everybody told me that. But, you know, I talk about this in my book, is I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And they said, hey, let's sign him. And I said, that's fine if y'all think that. And when they decided to release him, I'm not going to tell my basketball people what to do. Okay, now, do I have to give the final, you know, yes, absolutely. But it's something really big has to happen for me to say no when they all want to go the other way. But I'm extremely disappointed that he's not back in the league, even though he might not have been the perfect fit for us. There's a lot of teams that can use Carmelo Anthony and his leadership, and he is just a true gentleman every time I talk to him.
Now, one thing you may not know is your star player, James Harden, is trying a one-legged three-point shot. You in or out on that? Is the check clear?
The check's definitely going to clear, but I don't know if James is going to be shooting that or not. He better shoot at least 35% when he does it, or everybody's going to have a problem. But that's James is James, and what I love about James, and I talk about this in the book again, be the bull, and that son of a gun is the bull. And his neck can hurt him, his eye can't see, his arm won't come up. That son of a gun's still going in the game. In a time when all athletes are tender and soft, James Harden is the bull, and I just love him for it.
Hey, Tillman, it's great meeting you. I love your energy. Gonna read your book. I appreciate you signing for it. If you could, because you're new to sports ownership relatively, you just bought the team, I think, in 2017. How do you see yourself as an NBA owner or a sports franchise owner? Is there any other owner in football or basketball that you point to and say, that's how I want my brand, that's how I want my identity to be?
I probably see a lot of different ones that I like certain pieces, just like I never had a great mentor in business, but I try to learn from different ones. Stephen A. always refers to me as George Steinbrenner, and I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
Oh, that's a lot of championships.
Yeah, but I love Stephen A. But I truly try to learn a little bit from all of them. But I'm different. Remember, I've been out there a long time. Matter of fact, I was a partner in the Rockets between 82 and 92. Okay, and then I was a partner in the Texans.
You bought them when you were just a child?
No, I was a little partner. Remember.
Were you like 12 years old?
No, but believe it or not, I was only like 22 when they sold for $10 million to Charlie Thomas. So I owned a percentage of them.
Wow.
And then I lost the bid in 92 when Les Alexander paid $85 million. We had a bid in at 80. And then over the next 25 years, I had to pay $2.2 billion for him. But I sit in the same seats I've been sitting at for 25 years. Mm. And so I've been around it. And like I said, then I was with Bob and the Texans. But I had to sell it when I bought the Golden Nugget Casino and started rolling out casinos. So I've been around sports a long, long time. But I've been doing this a long time, except used to do it along with business shows. So it's fun to mix in some sports.
Tillman, thank you very much. Yeah,
thanks, gentlemen. A lot of pleasure.
Hope to have you back. All right, let's move to the NCAA and the California Fair Pay to Play Act. The law Governor Gavin Newsom signed earlier this week on the set of LeBron James' HBO TV show, The Shop. The law gives California college athletes the freedom to profit from their likeness and image through endorsement, sponsorships, and merchandise sales, things that are all prohibited by the NCAA rules. Yesterday, I stated on this show that the law's intention is to emancipate shoe company executives, not college athletes, and maintain the status quo. The so-called Adidas investigation and trials that made felons out of shoe executives and college basketball assistant coaches are the real impetus behind the Fair Pay to Play Act. The implementation of the law frees Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, and the rest to legally repackage the money they traditionally illegally funnel to top college athletes. Instead of direct cash payments to parents, uncles, AAU coaches, and assistant coaches, the shoe companies can now strike endorsement deals for t-shirt sales and whatnot using the likeness of high-profile athletes. Oh, but the new law did include a key restriction. if a school has a shoe deal in place with a shoe company, the athlete can't strike a deal with a competitor. But the athlete, he's free. No, he's not. That's why I call this Jim Crow, not Abe Lincoln. This is about protecting shoe companies, not liberating athletes. It's not even about damaging NCAA-mandated amateurism. It's redefining the status quo and selling it to the public as freedom. LeBron James is the mascot for all of it. Newsom and Nike use LeBron to convince college athletes and sports fans that significant progress has been made. This law is more agent of chaos than solution for the NCAA's outdated model of amateurism. It's not a step in the right direction for college basketball, college football, or the professional leagues they support. It's going to provoke other states to enact their own set of unique laws. We live in this era where social media and the Hollywood culture push us to embrace chaos and tear down every American institution. It's a mistake. College athletics should be reformed by experts within the industry, not destroyed by politicians looking to build a brand. Newsom and Nancy Skinner, the California State Senator who sponsored the Fair Pay to Play Act, are a couple of Northern California activists who don't have the best interests of athletes or athletics in mind. They're promoters of institutional chaos. Just because Nike told LeBron to fall for their okey-doke doesn't mean you have to. I want to end NCAA amateurism. There are far smarter ways to do it than the Fair Pay to Play Act. All right, guys, Marcellus, get us rolling here. Yeah. Think the Fair Pay to Play Act causes more chaos than solutions?
If I had to lean one way, I would say chaos in this respect. A lot of moving parts here, so therefore there are going to be a lot of unintended consequences, good ones and bad ones. Is this a baby step towards the end goal, or is this a huge leap towards the end goal? And unfortunately, I think that's already been lost. Pay the athletes was the end goal. And this is a switcheroo and distraction from that. Giving only the top college players a chance at endorsement likeness dollars is a true distraction from what the intended goal was, were to pay all the athletes. So we've already had a misstep or a baby step in that direction. What are these unintended consequences? Two jump to mind. One, in the locker room. So now I'm on a team with Trevor Lawrence. I'm at Clemson, and he's big time. He's going to get his money. But these rosters are 100 deep. A lot of walk-ons. A lot of guys sitting there say, hey, man, you're a four-star. You're playing before me, but I deserve an opportunity. Therefore, I deserve opportunity at the money that we get from our likeness. Is that opportunity going to be granted? So there's going to be infighting just at the professional level, but now with less mature players, 18 to 21, 22 years old. Two, the businesses in the community, especially local businesses, B2C level, are going to be able to directly go to that athlete and pay him, which is tremendous. But then the school is going to get left out of that. I used to be in the school program. I used to be on the school screen during the games. Now I'm going directly to you, Trevor Lawrence. The school is sitting there saying, wait a minute, that's a bottom line issue that is affecting our pockets. So where's that resentment going to lie? Are they just going to throw up their hands and say new status quo, or are they going to push back? Those questions and more need to be answered before I can say this is a true solution.
Well, for the California law, I know there's other states that are working on laws. We have 3.5 years to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to affect till January of 2023. By then, we'll have other states that probably jump the line. We'll have litigation to figure out how to do this. I do think, to your point, there will be regulations put in place. This has to be out in the open. It cannot be under the table anymore, even though it could be legal under the table. I think it has to be out in the open. And what you brought up, there are valid concerns. But we need to go to a system that just allows players to have a little extra money in their pockets based off their image, name, and likeness. I don't think paying players per se is the way to go. This is why this is a great start to this. I think we've overestimated how this is going to reach. If you look at a football team with 85 scholarship guys, how many guys are truly going to make five, six, seven figures? Not seven figures, I don't think. five figures. Probably not very many. There'd be a lot of guys that are able to go home to their hometown touchdown club and speak for $1,000. Yeah. There'd be guys be able to go get a free lunch on campus. I'm watching this show on the Florida Gators today on a behind-the-scenes thing, and Mullen's wife, the head coach, had to call the NCAA to make sure that she could bring a sandwich to a player that just had surgery. Like, that needs to be done, right? We agree on that. This is the first step in that process, and we don't know yet how it's going to play out. We all have our ideas. I think yours are valid. I think yours are valid, too. That could be the reason behind this, but the start of this is the way to go, and we now have 3.5 years, at least in California, to figure it out. Who knows if they'll do it? Who knows if this will be repealed by then? Who knows how the NCAA will react? There are coaches on record now starting to agree with the principle of this. But for California alone, we have 3.5 years to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that there are coaches that have figured out, hey, I'm going to jump on board with this because they've heard from their shoe reps and hey, this is good for us or it's good for you. So I'm not surprised. What disappoints me is athletics are special. And just to be quite honest, I'm going to say this, and people may not like me for it. Football and basketball have been very good to people that look like me.
Yeah.
And when I see people that don't look like me, Nancy Skinner and Gavin Newsom, jump in here and say, I got the solution, and you're not involved in athletics at all, I want some experts. And I don't want LeBron in here after the fact. He ain't got a damn thing to do with this bill. He's doing what Nike's told him to do. He wasn't part of the formation of it. He never participated in college athletics. I don't need a mascot. I want experts to come in here and fix and remodel college athletics in a way that I still feel confident football and basketball is going to work for me and people that come from my situation. And so, and I think there's some aggressive things that the NFL, the NBA should be doing to support college athletics, football and basketball, because they've been very good to them. I want to see real solutions, not this stopgap measure that was done because James Gatto, from the Adidas executive, got 9 months in prison. And damn it, we got to fix that very quickly to make sure none of these other shoe executives go to jail. I want real solutions to end amateurism and to be fair to these athletics without tearing this down. And again, I think everybody gets so emotional and caught up and we hate the NCAA, we hate everything, let's all tear it down. When actually, if you go look at it and you go back and listen to our A block about these quarterbacks and who's getting paid and all the money that's going into these professional sports, go look at the NBA. Mm. This model is working. It needs to be remodeled, not destroyed.
Needs to be redefined, certainly. And we all know perfect is the enemy of good, so I'm not looking for a perfect system. But the step that they took is not the step that I thought was necessary because it let the schools off the hook. We're talking about redefining amateurism, and all we're doing is talking about a relationship between companies, shoe companies, local companies, and the athlete on the side. So there's no base salary for any athlete. There's no base. If you want to call the education the base salary, then we're in the same status quo we were before this bill. Governor Newsom, who I respect, who I've met, who I think has his heart in the right place, maybe not the most vested interest and understanding of experience, because this act really put the shoe companies in a powerful position. The school's off the hook, and then the schools are going to recalibrate this new relationship between its athletes and have a response. And I don't think that this act takes that into account.
The problem with the base salary of college athletics is you have to spread it around to all the sports, right? You can't just be football or basketball. There'll be plenty of lawsuits around fairness of that, right? And how do you, is it $2,000 a month? Is it $3,000 a month? Is it $4,000 a month? Yes, this let the colleges off the hook, but I do think there's going to have to be a compliance involved with the colleges. Like, there's going to have to be, because you probably have to file taxes on this money. Who's going to help you set that up? College will have to help. Like, there's going to be some, I think, I could be wrong, some regulations put in place between now and January of 2023. I don't know what that's going to be. I don't trust they're going to do it right, I don't think. We'll see when the time comes.
There's another group being let off the hook here, and because I agree with you. These professional leagues that benefit directly from college football and basketball, they need to be part of the solution for college because they've been benefiting greatly from college athletics. And so there's a way to improve football and basketball in America while being economically fair to the kids that are being exploited. And there's the handful of superstars. I don't feel like I needed any more than the education Ball State gave me. My level of value didn't elevate beyond, hey, give me an education. You brought me out of the ghetto. You gave me education. Fair exchange. Let's take care of the guys that drive it, make it healthy. I would love to see something where I would, again, I've argued on this show. I'd have no problem if Zion Williamson somehow made $3 or $4 million a year while he was at Duke. Mm. No problem with that. I think it's good for Zion. I think it's good for the NBA. Those are the type of solutions I want to see explored rather than these stopgap measures. Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houshmandzadeh's back.
Welcome back.
Let's move to Lamar Jackson. Sponsored by the Spark Cash Card from Capital One. Lamar is looking to bounce back this week against a tough Steelers defense after a subpar showing in the Ravens' loss to the Cleveland last week. Lamar started the season red hot and appeared to be on the verge of shutting up all of his critics, but lately he started to look a little more like the old Lamar. With huge drops in his numbers across the board between the Ravens' wins in week one and two and their back-to-back losses in weeks three and four. All right, the question here is, expect Lamar to bounce back against the Steelers? I think he's going to have tough sledding. I think the Steelers found something on defense last week against the Bengals, that pass rush. And I think the Steelers and a desperate Mike Tomlin are going to be a problem for Lamar and the Ravens.
I expect Lamar Jackson to bounce back, and I think it's still not going to land in a good place in terms of how we receive Lamar Jackson. He's in a no-win situation in this game. Think about it. You're playing against the Steelers. That's a 1-3 bunch. You go out there and beat them and do well, there you go again, playing against another sorry team, the Lamar Jackson narrative. But then if you go out there and struggle, dang, we back to the last year narrative. You can't even play quarterback. You can't even lead your team to a victory over a team that only had one victory before. So this is one of those games I don't like to call a trap game or mail-in game, but in terms of Lamar Jackson, the story and the validation of him at the quarterback position, I don't think this does anything for that conversation. You need the win. You need your defense, who's been giving up over 500 yards per the last two games, to show up. But in terms of Lamar Jackson, I don't think we're going to have much evidence towards his resume.
If you put him under a microscope, I mean, it is what it is. He's played well against Arizona, Miami, he struggled against Kansas City and Cleveland.
That
and
part.
That's just the truth. Now, do I expect him to bounce back? I do, because when I look at what the Steelers did against Cincinnati's offensive line is terrible. Mm. They couldn't block me right now. Mm. And so Pittsburgh, they feasted on that. They're not going to do that against Baltimore. They're not just going to manhandle Baltimore up front. The Steelers aren't the Steelers of old. Defensively, Baltimore's defense should be able to keep the Pittsburgh offense in check. That game was nip and tuck against the Bengals until they kind of pulled away late. And so I expect them to bounce back. He does well against the bad teams, at least.
I'm not convinced the Steelers are a bad team. They're off to a bad start. I'm not convinced they're a bad team.
Their defense created 5 turnovers in San Francisco and they still lost.
No. I get it. They're off to a bad start. I'm not convinced they're a bad team. I like the Minkum Fitzpatrick pickup.
I love that pickup.
I do believe the Steelers' defense is going to be a good pass rush defense. I don't think – yeah, did they take advantage of a bad Bengals offensive line? Yes. But T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree, those guys are for real. And I disagree with you. Anytime you go on the road – in your division, and particularly you go on the road to Pittsburgh, and Mike Tomlin's got his back up against the wall, and you pull off a victory, that's a damn good look for Lamar Jackson, regardless of what Pittsburgh's record is. And again, it's just like Lamar has already said, it's going to be crazy up in Pittsburgh. The Steelers fans haven't given up on this season yet, and I don't think anybody in that Steelers organization has. I think this is a good test for Lamar.
It's going to be great resistance. The atmosphere, the team is poised to rebound and correct their season from the early struggles. All that's true. But if he goes up there and wins that game, trust me, I understand people are going to just say, you beat Pittsburgh. They're lowly Pittsburgh this year. He has the number one ranked offense and the number 27th ranked defense. And we're talking about Baltimore. I don't remember Baltimore ever being in this position where you're like, I mean, Jamal Lewis days, but still,
it's rare. That's rare.
It's rare. Like, yeah. He's carrying – he literally, in many moments, is carrying this Baltimore defense to that point. I just know that how this is going to land. He needs to win because that's what you're supposed to do. Win the games you're expected to win. However, when he does that, we're going to be right back in this conversation. Is he still a real quarterback?
And you would take that over, you're not a real quarterback.
Yeah.
So you'll take that. He'll win the game. I believe he'll bounce back, and you'll take it.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Russell Wilson.
You.
Oh. You're on a hot streak with your big dummy of the day.
What do you mean streak?
Making two in a row.
What ain't a streak?
Yup.
I just won.
I figured out some things today, Markelis.
Don't do it.
Hey, man. Somebody said, I realized when I left Ball State, I didn't need to learn nothing else. That answers all our problems on this show. You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Why did I say that? I don't remember saying that.
I remember that. I felt it.
Let's talk Russell Wilson, who is off to a tremendous start this year.
I caught that.
And tonight is up against Sean McVay's Rams team that just gave up 55 points to Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers. Marcellus, you think Russ carves up the Rams like Jameis Winston did?
Oh, man, look, he needs to. They haven't beaten the Rams in 2 years. Week 5, 2017. Sean McVay effect and Jared Goff out there. We didn't see much of Todd Gurley, so I think that the Rams are going to put up a good fight, but he wins the game closely. Russell Wilson, 31-27. Not carve him up, but certainly get what he wants.
Russell Wilson throws for 350 yards and four TDs tonight and proves my point that Russell Wilson is the greatest quarterback of the new black quarterback era. Uncle Jimmy, you got that damn stupid African American shirt on again today, but man. I know you agree with me. This era is defined by Russell Wilson, not Colin Kaepernick.
Man, let me tell you something.
What?
I can give less than four flying farts in the wind whether or not Russell Wilson carves up the Rams, Sean McVay, or a Christmas ham. In the words of Clark Gable, frankly, my dear, I really don't give a damn.
Right.
Okay.
What concerns me is the fact that I done had to be sunk here again on behalf of the Caprican Nations.
Sunk.
To speak on behalf of all Caprican Americans and our leader, Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me. Talk to me.
How dare you? How dare you claim that anybody else beside the great silent leader, Colin Kaepernick.
The great silent leader?
The greatest black quarterback, not just of our time, but of our era. No man since Muhammad Ali has ever experienced such scrutiny. Yeah. Nobody else has been so ostracized, circumcised, and for what? Look, man.
Circumcised.
Kaepernick is part of the great African-American suburban struggle. He's the original mulatto brother.
Oh, man.
And how dare you criticize and blasphemize and idolatrize and attempt to ostracize the Egyptian queen herself.
Oh, man.
Les Nettie. We here at the Nation call her Laquita Patrick.
Laquita Patrick.
You say Cap's not a winner. Let me ask you this. Has Russell Wilson ever won an Emmy? Because Cap won a little Emmy for that Cap commercial. You know that one for that Nike commercial?
Yeah, that's right.
That might have went over your head a little bit.
He did.
He did.
Hey, I'm also going to give you this little fun fact, this little ditty. Hey, you do know that Cap and Nettie are the reigning Beard Whiz champions of the Southwest Conference right now. You know they took the title from Dwayne Wade and Gabby Union. They did it last year at LeBron James All-Star Basketball Festival.
Oh, so those are the champions.
Can Russell Wilson and Sierra say that they got that? Can they even get an invite?
To the Beard Whiz tournament? Yeah, I think they can.
You are dumb.
Look, man, y'all done seen the videos, man.
What is it?
Caps up every day at 5 o'clock.
Yeah,
arm so strong, he overthrowing receivers. You seen him overthrow Eric Reed. He overthrew Odell Beckham Jr. Hey, man, is Russell Wilson getting up at 5 o'clock?
No.
When was the last time you seen Russell Wilson overthrow a wide receiver? Hey, man, real talk.
Nah.
I'm going to settle this right now. Okay. You know how you can tell that Russell Wilson is the real black quarterback? Huh?
Russell Wilson?
You know how you can tell, you know how you can tell that Colin Kaepernick is the real brother?
How?
You know you can tell?
What?
Because he's the one that can't get a job. All that experience, that brother still can't get a job.
All right, listen. I got Russell Wilson at a 79 on my approval rating.
Look at us.
He's almost GOAT status. Probably will be after tonight's game.
Yeah, can't say anything bad about Russell Wilson. I don't know about this whole era king star of it, but he's balling out of control, one away from GOAT status. Like America thinks. Same thing.